Welcome to Season 3 of the Humble and Honest Podcast. I am Stephen Francis, and it means so much for you to join me as I have humble and honest conversations with Christian leaders on cultural issues. This podcast is a collection of conversations that will create conversations. I welcome guests who have strong convictions on matters relating to faith and culture to share their opinions on matters we're all thinking about or possibly haven't even considered. Quick note, though. I do not agree with everyone who is a guest on the show, and I have a strong belief that neither will you. However, I encourage you to hear what is shared on this podcast as an opportunity to learn and grow in your faith journey. Today's conversation is with Pastor Roy Dockery. Pastor Roy Dockery is the host of the Savage Truth podcast, an activist, rapper, and international public speaker. Pastor Roy Dockery currently runs an international ministry and a global healthcare technology organization with the support of his amazing family, which includes his loving wife and three amazing children. Using his voice as a force for change in the professional, public, and faith-based communities, Pastor Roy Dockery is no stranger to stages of many sizes. Today, Pastor Roy gives us his savage truth regarding issues like the Equality Act and often misquoted scripture. This conversation is a hot one, so be ready to be challenged now with this conversation with Pastor Roy Dockery. Roy Dockery, thank you so much for being on the Humble and Honest podcast today.
Appreciate it, man. Glad to be here, man. Thanks for inviting me to your platform.
Listen, I was telling you before we started recording that I'm a big fan of your content. I watch it every day. I'm a big fan of Savage News and many of the other things that you cover. But quickly, so we can get into a lot of the great stuff that you do, I'd love for people to first hear your story. So can you tell us a little bit about Roy Dockery and how he got to the platform that he's on today?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to do it as quick as possible. I think the main way I'll summarize myself is that I'm a leader of leaders. That's kind of where God has positioned me to be in this point. You know, I'm a servant, a creative person. I'm a business executive and I'm a pastor. So coming to that point was just through different progressions in life, right? Shortly after I got saved, I became a Christian hip hop artist. Which kind of put me in the space of ministry and public speaking. I joined the military. And from a professional perspective, studying technology in college, I went into nuclear power and then into healthcare technology and robotics and was able to grow a career in that space. So now I'm a vice president at a healthcare technology company. But along the entire time, still serving, right? Still doing ministry, doing music, mentoring people, always had a heart for young adults. And like college students and young people and young couples. I've been married now for 14, going on 15 years. So just going through those processes, man, God just continued to like evolve what he had me engaged in. Right. So like I said, I went from poetry to Christian hip hop, from Christian hip hop to like public speaking and different engagements like that. Public speaking led to preaching in ministry, right? And then, and now to the position of being a pastor, man. So I just try to use every gift that I have available to serve God and in some way have an impact for the kingdom, whether that's in the marketplace, in the workplace, in ministry, in our community, or wherever I just get an opportunity to serve. You know, I've known Ruslan for a couple years through music and through some mutual friends. And he was like, man, like, you should get on YouTube. Like, you know, you got your podcast, you got long form content. He was like, you could do an hour podcast with no notes, no nothing. He was like, all of this stuff is coming on the top of your head. He was like, you should try YouTube. All right. And then praying about it. And God's like, yeah, like this is the direction I want you to go in. So I started making YouTube content on December 6th. So I've been making YouTube videos for 3.5 months. I have over 200 videos posted. You know what I mean? Like we just peaked over 1900 subscribers. I just hit 60 Patreon subscribers yesterday. And I think we're like 400 or 500 hours from hitting the 4,000 hours watched, even to get to monetization. You know what I'm saying? So like God's been blessing that. And I tell people all the time, I'm trying to be obedient, right? And like the script that God has written out for my life is so good. I just try not to act out of character.
Bro, first off, that is incredible, inspirational. And also, I just love just the genuineness in what you're doing. It seems like truly you God has placed something in you and you're just working that gift. This isn't just you just trying to get clicks and all that type of stuff. And I think that's why even the stuff you talk about resonates with me so well, because it's not you trying to create content that makes people feel safe. Not to say you're not trying to be for all people, but if you say something that could offend somebody, that's just you doing what God says, you know, this needs to be said. I'm not here for your feelings in that regard.
Yeah. And I really don't. And it's weird. Like, I love people, but I don't care how you feel. Right.
Yeah.
Because our feelings are normally wrapped in our flesh and not our spirit. Right. Like, I care about your conviction. And so I talk to things that kind of hit people's conviction. Right. So not guilt, not shame, not shade. Right. But like conviction, like I say stuff and people are like, man, I feel like I should do that. Or I know I'm not doing that, or I can relate to that. So that's why even in the things that I talk about, like when I share the news, right, like it's just to one, I want Christians to remain engaged and aware of what's going on around us. And occasionally there are things that pop up in the news that prompt conviction. Right. That we're not representing Christ well, that we're not dealing with systemic issues in our community, that, you know, we're not confronting things that are right in front of us. Because some of us just like to sit in a Christian bubble and then point at the world and talk about what the world is doing wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. When like that's what God didn't tell us to be a infrequent spotlight. Right. Where we just get to creep up on the world and hit them with a bright light real quick. Like that's not what God said. He said we're supposed to be a light to the world. Like we're supposed to be a constant source where people can see the context of the world and have a worldview through the eyes of Christians. But we only want to talk about church. We only want to talk about like Christian stuff. And like, you know, we can talk about the Equality Act. Like we need to talk about what's going on in the world and be able to talk about it through a Christian context instead of acting like Christians don't see what's going on. Yeah.
That is powerful. And I absolutely agree with all of that. Can we talk about the Equality Act then? Because for me, what I've seen is a level of, I don't want to call it hysteria, but there's definitely been a decent amount of Christians, especially Christian leaders, that have heard about the Equality Act and are pretty much saying it is the end of the church as we know it. You know, we're on the verge of persecution. And maybe there's some truth to that. I don't know. I don't know the future either. But can you share your thoughts about it and how you believe is the best way for Christians, especially pastors, to be engaging this?
Yeah. So and you said something that I find that I like when you said, like, you know, people are like, oh, this could be the end of the church as we know it. And then I'm like, maybe the church as we know it needs to end.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, I know as a pastor, that might sound weird, right? But when they started limiting church gatherings, right? What was the response from Christians? Oh, my God, this is going to be the end of church as we know it. Persecution. Churches still seem to be here. They're functioning differently. They're wasting less money on entertainment and smoke machines and light shows because you can't see all of that virtually anyway, right? So they're minimizing that. A lot of them are doing more outreach, doing more in their community, doing more benevolence. So it's like, yeah, like it is a threat to the institution of the church that's in bed with the government. Right. That is willing to limit what they say and what they do to accept financial benefits from the government. Right. Because when you talk about the Equality Act, even when you talk about affirmative action or equal opportunity employment, no company has to participate in equal opportunity. No company has to participate in affirmative action. You're only required to be an equal opportunity employer if you take federal or state funding. If you want federal grants, if you want federal programs, if you want vouchers for daycares and for schools and things of that nature, if you want a charter school, right, that gets money from the state, all of those things is why the church went crazy about same-sex becoming legalized. Right. Because all of these churches have schools, they have daycares, they have federal grant money, they have state grant money. Right. That's paying for their food programs, that's paying for their after school programs, that paid for their computers. Right. That, you know, that's offsetting or helping with expenses of the church because they do genuine stuff, social good for the community. But when you take federal money, and I know this because I work with the federal government, I work with, you know, I mean, whatever in my profession, there, when you sign that purchase order to take money, there are rules associated with that purchase order that say you will abide by A, B, C, and D. And a lot of that is federal law. So churches who have been taking money, benefiting from voucher programs, public school money, grants, all of that other stuff, even to some degree, nonprofit status, right? They are not allowed to discriminate. So the more people you add to classes of discrimination, now the church can't legally discriminate against those people and still take money from the government. Any business is legally allowed to discriminate. Any business, right? If me and you right now said we wanted to open up Jamaican Brothers Catering and Seafood, you can't tell me I have to hire somebody that's not Jamaican. You can't, right? Like, look at how many family businesses are out there. You can't tell, you know what I'm saying, the plumber who's got his wife as an accountant and his son as an apprentice that he has to hire somebody that's not related to him. That's not a legal thing. It does not happen. It only is a requirement if you call yourself an equal opportunity employer so that you can bid and get money from state and federal government that requires that. You see what I'm saying? So a lot of this is about money with the church. And so to me, it's an extension of the same thing with same-sex marriage or, you know, civil unions and recognizing it. From an Equality Act perspective, now you're talking about gender equality. Now you got to, you know, it's including transgender. It's including, you know, like sensitivity around pronouns and stuff that the church doesn't necessarily want to deal with. But I have a pastor hat, which I'm a pastor 24 hours a day. But I'm also a business executive. So like in my, like I employ 210 people and I don't think it would be fair for me to be able to terminate somebody because they went and got a sex change. If it doesn't stop them from being able to do their job, I should not be able to terminate them for it. And that's what the Equality Act is pushing for as well, right? Like you can't like wrongful termination and all of this other stuff. If you're still able to do the job, you know what I mean? Like if you go and decide you want to have a hook instead of a regular hand, and now you can't do the job because the requirements, you know what I mean? Because the requirements of the job and I can't accommodate from an ADA perspective, then that's fine. But like the Equality Act is trying to protect, is expanding the extension for protection against discriminated classes. But I don't understand the hysteria because churches are legally allowed to discriminate. You don't have to hire a Muslim to be the receptionist at your Catholic church. You don't have to hire a pagan, you know what I'm saying, to be the janitor at your Baptist church. You are not required. So why would the church be upset about an expansion of discrimination protections when you're legally allowed to discriminate? It's because the church takes federal money and state money. And the more things that you add to that list, the church legally can't speak out against and still take that money. If the church gives the money back, they can talk about whatever they want. If the church stops worrying about their tax protection, their nonprofit status, you can say whatever you want. So I say to the church, pay taxes and get your hand out the government's pocket. And you wouldn't have nothing to worry about.
Drop mic on that. My goodness. I mean, you bring up a lot of things that are a big deal. And I do want to also mention this. There might be some minute, like very small demographic of people that are of a different religion or different belief system that would apply to a job at your church. But chances are, most people are going to keep that same energy, even if the Equality Act passes, in the sense of like, if I am a Muslim, I'm not going to apply for a job at a Christian church because that's just against my beliefs. I just don't think that would jive at all. But I think you bring up the bigger point of the idea of even speaking against that or doing something is an issue for the church, because that could affect the government benefits that many churches have been reaping off of for so long. I want to switch gears real quick though, because there's the big political issue of the Equality Act that's happening on one side. And then on a very non-threatening to your life side, something that's been talked about a while at the time of this recording, is the Kirk Franklin situation. And I think, and we talked about this, so many people have talked about this, that it's kind of like, you know what? Listen to Ruslan, listen to Alan Parr, listen to some of these other people that have done tons and tons of time on it. And I think also me and you were probably on the same page about this because we are two black with Jamaican parent men. And we know what happens when you cross the line, you know? Does the use of the language that Kirk Franklin had and that whole situation, does it offend you? Does it bother you? Knowing the context of what happened and him being a Christian leader, what is your response to that? And what would you even tell someone in your congregation?
Yeah, I'm weird in that, right? And I kind of talked about this a little bit. I don't know if you saw the Ruslan thing where we were, stop quoting that verse, we were talking about cursing. Like, I'm not offended by language.
Yeah.
Language doesn't offend me. But you know why? Because I don't hang around Christians all day, right? Like, I don't live and I'm not isolated into a Christian space. I get people that drop F-bombs on Zoom calls, you know what I'm saying? Like, on a regular basis, because I'm not surrounded by people who think that, you know what I'm saying, their piety is based on the words they choose to use or not use. So, like, words don't offend me. Like, I hear stuff that Kirk Franklin says every day, you know what I'm saying? So, like, it wasn't like, so as leaders, honestly, I think we need to start paying more attention to the heart behind what people say instead of what words they're using. Because, and like I've shared before, some of the most hurtful things I've ever heard were said to me at church, and there was no profanity used. You know what I mean? When we tell people that they don't have faith, when we're telling people that they're going to hell, when we tell people that they backsliding because we don't agree with what they're doing. And you know what I'm saying? Like, that's speaking curses upon people's lives, telling people they're going to be just like their daddy or you just like your mama. Like, that's also prominent in Black culture and needs to stop. And one thing that my man Jerome Gay said that I appreciated, it was on his Instagram. He said that he said his problem with it is we need to stop normalizing verbal abuse in Black families. Like, we're like, oh, my mom said worse stuff to me. Well, she shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't like the normalizing of that. And the biggest problem I honestly had with the Kirk, because my thing was like, families have fights, right? Like, yeah. And now you got to know that you could say something and it could be made public. My biggest issue wasn't even with the conversation, because I know that stuff happens, right? You know what I mean? Conversations like that happen in my family, like in their private. My problem was that in his apology, he didn't apologize to his son. He apologized to his fans. Mm-hmm. That made me mad, because that's the same thing. And I don't know if you saw, like, I did the video on the announcer in Norman, Oklahoma that didn't know he was off mute and called the little Black girls the N-word. He didn't apologize to those little Black girls. He apologized to his family and his friends for letting them down. Like, you're not even you're apologizing to people who are offended by you offending somebody. So like, your son was obviously hurt because he put it out there. Then, I mean, you cussed him out, it's out there, it's on blast. And now you're apologizing to your fans because they had to see you like that. Not because, like, you know, I spoke to my son in a way, my anger got the best of me. And so first of all, I want to apologize to my son, because as the mature person in this situation, as the parent, as the Christian, right, as the minister, I got beyond myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, that should have been the apology. And then the second part of that should have been into my fans and whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, that happened, right? Yes, that happened. I crossed the line. I said things to my son that I shouldn't have said, right? Like, there's other ways for us to be able to address that. And, you know, and I apologize for that. And I apologize to you because I let you guys down. But he didn't do that. He skipped straight to two, and you actually ignored the offense, right? Because even the Bible says, if you have an ought with your brother, don't even come have communion. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't even bring your offering to the table. Go resolve that ought before you even come and pray to me, is what God says. So you had that kind of relationship and that kind of situation with your son, and you're not even going to reconcile that. You're going to go talk to Tamron Hall and, you know what I mean, you call it into everybody's show for an interview, where you should be is in a therapy office with your son working out that ought, because that's what the Bible says, right?
But that could
your
be
ought
happening
ain't with a million people you don't know who got comments and throwing shade at you. Your ought is with your son, who you clearly have a poor relationship with, and you should be, because of your responsibility as a parent and your responsibility as a Christian, you should be trying to work that out, like, you know what I mean, with fear and trembling, just like you're working out your salvation. So that's what, I didn't really see anybody respond to that. And yeah. Like I said, I was going to say something about it, but I just didn't. But that's my thing. Like, you didn't apologize to your son. You apologized to your fans. And Do your fans mean more to you than your son?
Hey, world. I hope you're enjoying this conversation so far. It would mean so much to me if you helped support this show. I want to let you know of a couple ways that you could do just that. If you haven't already, you can subscribe, share, or leave a review for the podcast so more people get the chance to know about it. Also, you can be a contributor through Patreon. For as low as $1 a month, you can help support this show and help continue these conversations you are hearing today. In fact, as a thank you, patrons will be getting all the episodes this season in their entirety. And also, something I'm very excited about is they will be getting my episode reactions. Many people have wondered, where do I stand regarding some of the issues mentioned in these episodes? And patrons will be able to gain all that information. So if you want unedited episodes, my reaction to the episodes, and so much more great bonus content, Patreon is the place to go. Check out the description in this episode for the link. But right now, let's get back into this conversation with Pastor Roy Dockery. Now, I will say that could happen. Like, that could have happened. He could have apologized.
And I'll tell you, my wife showed me, his son commented on his apology video.
Okay.
My wife showed me, and his son was like, it's nice that you apologize to everybody but me. Like, his son said it on his apology video on Instagram. Okay. Like, it's nice that you know how to apologize, but you didn't say it to me. He might apologize after that, but before that apology video, he had not apologized to his son.
He did damage control by hopping on Instagram right away and making that apology. Yeah. And you brought up something that I think is the two things you brought up that I think I have to mention, because you're right. I think, because I said this, I heard so many people say this, especially in the Black community, man, I've heard worse from my mama, or, you know, when I was growing up, they did this, they did that. Normalizing that, especially in Black culture, should not be the case. Obviously, yes, these things are known, these things are happening, but there should be a sense of that wasn't okay though. Just because that's common doesn't mean that should be casual.
Like, that comes from the mentality of like, I have to beat and abuse my children at home so that it doesn't happen to them in the world. Like, that is a mentality that comes from slavery. So as Black people, we want to reject everything from slavery except for the dehumanizing and the abuse of our own children because we think we're preparing them for the world. Like, no, like, we need to stop doing that. Like, verbal abuse is not cool. We shouldn't be threatening our kids. You know what I mean? We shouldn't be boxing our kids at home. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is abuse. But we normalized abuse in Black communities because from slavery, like, if we didn't get you in line in the house, you would get killed if you spoke out of line to a white person. So when you speak out of line to me, I'm gonna punch you in your face because they're going to lynch you. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you breaking rules at home, you know, I'm gonna beat you to your eye closed, because out there, they're going to kill you. You see what I'm saying? And like, we still do that in a way, but to a lesser degree. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I don't get you right, then the police gonna get you. And it's like, or I could just raise you right. I could talk to you in a reasonable manner. Like, everyone always compliments how well-behaved my kids are. I have never touched any of my children.
Yeah.
Never. Not a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 4-year-old. Never spanked my kids. My wife may have spanked my kids maybe like, they might have got like one tap each. You know what I'm saying? Maybe two. And then like, that's it. Because like, we talk to our kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, we make them understand, but we also set expectations in advance. Mm-hmm. And then hold them to that standard. You know what I mean? I'd rather my kids have conviction around their behavior than being afraid of me. Because then what happens when they leave home? They're not afraid of you. They have no conviction really of right or wrong, because the only thing they were responding to was the fear of getting caught. Then they leave your house and they wild out. And then they still wind up in the trouble you think you were trying to keep them from in the first place.
Yeah.
I
appreciate that insight. The other thing that I want to mention that you brought up in the Kirk Franklin situation is the use of language. And yes, you did a pop. Well, it was popular to me. I don't know what the analytics are, but I thought it was phenomenal. Something called Stop Quoting That Verse. And it was you and several other pastors and leaders speaking on verses that are constantly taken out of context. And one of those verses was the verse about unwholesome communication out of your mouth. And you kind of touched on it a little bit, but let's go a little deeper here, because what you're saying here is unwholesome communication isn't just four-letter words, but it's sometimes even you saying you're going to be just like your daddy, or you're no good, you're useless. Those are, that could be more of what the verse is talking about. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Expound on this for me.
Yeah, I think, right, and that's the thing. Like the Bible talks about profane praise. It talks about profane worship. You know what I'm saying? Like, it talks about unwholesome talk. It talks about curses, right? We're talking about cussing. So, like, a lot of the stuff that we talk about is based on cultural taboo. It has nothing to do with the Bible. You know what I'm saying? Like, when the Bible's talking about unwholesome talk coming out of your mouth, they're clearly not talking about the four-letter words that we use. They spoke a completely different language. And even today, in their culture, the words that are considered to be taboo or profane are not the same words that we consider. So even something being deemed inappropriate is cultural, and it's based on time. And like one thing Jason had said, I remember when poop was a bad word.
Yeah.
Right. Like, oh, don't say that. But now people say crap like it ain't nothing. People, you know, say the S word like it ain't nothing. But it's like, but like, really, it's like the lessening of sensitivity to people being offended by words and not listening to what you're saying. Right. Like, if I've had people, I remember performing at a secular nightclub, like me and my record label were there, and we were the only Christians performing. So people are in there drunk, and we on stage, you know what I'm saying, tearing it down, talking about Jesus, whatever. And when we got off stage, this drunk white guy walked up to me and he was like, man, that was effing awesome. That was so blah, blah, blah. Like, every other word was profanity. But I heard everything that he said. Right. Like, this man is in a context, and he was like, I used to go to church when I grew up, but my dad was abusive and he was an alcoholic. This is a drunk man in the middle of a nightclub telling me his story and how when we're talking about God, it's connecting to something in him. But as a Christian, if I'd have been like, hey, man, you know, I'm a pastor, bro, watch your language, I would have shut down his entire conversation instead of listening to what he's saying. Right. So when you said when the Bible's talking about let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, it's not talking about words. It's talking about the messages you're conveying, right? Mm-hmm. And like the message or the information you're conveying is a combination of words. So like again, how you put the words together, right? I can just put the same words in a sentence in a different way, and one of them can be unwholesome and one of them can be wholesome. You see what I'm saying? So, and a lot of it has to do with the heart behind it. And I think we get into a legalistic mindset or fundamentalist, where we try to say, as long as I don't say these words, what I'm saying is wholesome.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I always joke, I love movies. I love comedy. Like Talladega Nights, and Ricky Bobby would be like, with all due respect. So it didn't matter what he said after saying with all due respect, because I've already said, so I can say something completely disrespectful. I feel like Christians are like that. As long as I'm not using a four-letter word, as long as I'm not cussing you out, I can be disrespectful or condescending or rude, which I think the Bible would consider to be unwholesome, right? I can be speaking negativity over your life, right? I can be racist, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can be sexist. I can make inappropriate comments about women, but like, I'm not using these words. I didn't call it a B word. You know what I'm saying? So like, and if we give ways to dance around it without getting to the heart of what we're really doing. And so unwholesomeness, I think, again, is the message, not the individual words. And it's the intent of the heart with the words, because you can say something positive sarcastically.
Yep.
You look wonderful today, when what you're really saying is you look like hot trash. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I think Christians try to do. We try to put stuff in boxes that makes it easier for us to be Christ-like instead of actually transforming our mind and transforming our heart. You know what I mean? And like, and I know that, I know you want to talk about like my use or non-use of the N-word, but like, that's kind of the conviction that led me to that place. Cause it's not really the individual words, but it's what are you trying to convey?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And what audience are you speaking to? And even more than that, if God puts somebody in your life and has them talking to you, right? Like we overlook the significance of everyone around you has a purpose. Everyone. So like dismissing anything that anybody says is you not taking advantage of what God is presenting to you. So if you choose not to hear somebody because they curse, if you choose not to talk to somebody because of how they dress, if you choose, right, not to engage with somebody because they're wearing a political shirt you don't agree with, or, you know what I mean, or they're a color or they're a race or a nationality that you don't understand, we're actually minimizing the effect of the kingdom because we're supposed to be connecting with people. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think a lot of people, when they talk about profanity, they only talk about words for some reason. They don't talk about profane prayer or profane worship or speaking curses over people's lives. They're talking about language that they deem to be inappropriate. And that's fine, but that's a different conversation. It's not biblical. It's cultural. And it was like, what's inappropriate? Just like, I don't know if you have children, but like, you got to tell your kids some things are inappropriate, right? Yeah. To fart in public and laugh about it is inappropriate. Like, it's not sinful for my four-year-old to want to fart because he thinks the sound is funny, but it's inappropriate. You see what I'm saying? So there's a conversation around propriety that is tied to maturity and context. My son wants to fart in the house and laugh about it. I don't care. But like, don't fart at church next to some old lady. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you got to teach people that. And I think that's what we're trying to do with language, is we're trying to say, well, we don't feel that's appropriate. But in our, on our high horse, we try to make it about Christ and we try to make it about religion to try to convey some conviction, instead of saying like, that's not a mature thing to say, or there's other words that you can use, or there's better ways for you to speak. So I think there's a proprietary issue, whether things are appropriate when it comes to language. But when you talk about unwholesome talk and profane from a biblical perspective, or curses from a biblical perspective, we're not normally talking about the same thing.
Absolutely agree. And for all of the listeners, the verse is this, Ephesians 4:29. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. So that fits perfectly with what you are talking about. The spiciest conversation that I saw you have, where literally as you guys are talking, you say like the comments is crazy, was tithing. Because essentially a lot of the rhetoric that you're talking about, you're going to be blessed. You're going to receive, you know, a hundredfold, so on and so forth, comes from the rhetoric that says you need to be tithing. And some churches would even say you need to be giving above the tithe. That is the minimum. And I have no problem saying I'm for tithing. I believe in that. But I want you to just speak into that, humble and honest. Where do you stand on all that?
So I don't tithe. So I'll make that statement openly. But I give much more than 10% of my income to kingdom concepts and, you know what I mean, private foundations, organizations, and things of that nature from a charity and generosity perspective. There was a period of my life where I did tithe because I was trying to learn how to give. Right. I was trying to condition my heart to be generous because it's not something I grew up broke. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't no, you know what I mean? So even most of the people around me were tithing because they had to like force themselves to be generous. Right. They had to be like, well, I got to set it aside because if I don't, it's not going to be here. Right. So it's almost like if I don't give to God, then it's going to be gone because the rest of it will be consumed. And so, I'm a firm believer that charity, you know what I'm saying? We put charity above all things, you know what I'm saying? And everything that we do, we should do it with charity. So like, I'm for kind of a, you know, I guess people say kind of a more New Testament ideology around that we should give. And in that regard, I think most people would give more than 10% of their income. right? But I think we don't talk enough about finances and what we are really trying to teach the church, right? Because some people tithe, but some people only give money to their church and they have no other generosity in their lives. So are you meeting the biblical requirement for being charitable if all you do is give money to your church and you don't even know what your church is doing with the money? Like, is your church doing charity with your money? Or is your church paying light bills and more, right? So even if you're contributing to the church to make sure that the house is in order, you're not practicing personally. You're not practicing generosity. So one of my problems with tithing is tithing has conditioned Christians to be generous by proxy. Right? So I'm being generous because I'm giving money to my church under the assumption that my church is generous. But most people don't know how much money their church gives out in benevolence. If their church has a food pantry, because they don't serve in it, right? If there's a food closet, what kind of programs you have to help people with utilities and whatever else. It's almost like we feel like we can give money to the church and the church can be generous and charitable on our behalf. So I don't have to, right? And that's what people do, right? I pay money. And I mean, you see it all the time. I give money to the church. So if somebody around me is sick, I call the pastor because I already paid for this, right? Like if somebody needs prayer, I call the pastor. I call the deacons because like I'm paying for you to serve in Christian capacities. I'm paying for you to make sure the homeless is taken care of. I'm paying for you to make sure there's a worship service and people getting Bible studies where we don't feel like we're called to serve individually. Like I don't have a responsibility to evangelize. Like I don't have a responsibility to lay hands and pray for the sick. Like I don't have a responsibility to do unto the least of them as if they were me. So my problem with tithes is it's created generosity and charity by proxy. And so learning the behavior, getting into the practice of setting aside things to, you know what I'm saying, to be able to do. But I think that's the, I think one of the problems with the like tithing from an institutional perspective, not the concept of setting aside money to do work for God's kingdom, is that a lot of people give money to church and do nothing else. And yeah. I don't think that was the intention of the scripture. I don't think that's what Jesus is calling us to do when he asks us to be charitable. And that's what people do. Like the only charitable contribution a lot of people have is the money they give to their church. And then they can't help anybody else.
I get that completely, for sure. And thank you so much for just sharing humble, honest, raw, savage opinions on that. I got one more question for you because I know we got to go. I saw this video you did the other day and man, I watched it twice because I thought it was so good. You did a video in regards, you titled it Step Down or Step Out. And I connected with it so much as someone that has grown up serving in church and is now a pastor of a church, where there's sometimes so many people that start serving and either disappear, get burnt out. Talk to me about this. Share with me a quick summary of the video and something that even church leaders should be doing differently and those listening that could be a part of a church and are serving right now.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and what I said in the intro, right? Like I, you know, God has called me to be a leader of leaders. So I talk to mostly all leaders, right? I don't have a lot of people who follow me who are just followers, which is why I don't expect to have a large following because I lead leaders. But one thing that I've always noticed in just over the years, right? Mentoring people and, you know, connecting with people, especially when I did a lot of stuff with artists, right? So a lot of Christian hip hop artists are like worship leaders or youth ministers and youth pastors. And there was always this recurring theme of, you know, like, well, I feel like I need to move on. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like God's calling me in another direction in ministry, or, you know, I want to go in this direction or that direction. And then it was always like the only option people had, especially if you had a formal role in the church, like as a worship leader or whatever else, was like, yeah, so I got to resign from my church, not my position. And I was always like, that seems weird to me, right? Like, even at my company, we have supervisors, right? And one of the things I built into our organization was that we have a level of supervisors who are working supervisors. And I said, you will never be penalized if you decide one day you no longer want to be a supervisor, right? I'll take back that raise. You can go back to your old job, but I don't want people feeling like they got to quit because that's what we had people who became supervisors and they would just quit and like, it's too much work. And I'm like, fine, then you don't have to do it. Go back to your other job. We'll see if something else works for you. Just give me the raise back. Right. Like, and it was crazy because we had like four people that were like, cool, here, take the money. And I was like, huh? I'm like, all right, Jesus, I see what you're doing. Right. And then, and so that same regard from a ministry perspective, people will serve in worship for a period of time. They will serve in youth ministry for a period of time, right? They'll be on staff for a period of time, but maybe God built up the business. Maybe God gave them a career. Maybe God got, they got married, right? Like things change. And what I think we do a poor job at as leaders, right? Professional or from a ministry perspective, is checking in with our people to see if they're still where they want to be, not just doing what we need them to do. Because what we normally do as leaders is we start evaluating the outcome and we don't pay attention to the people that are doing the work, right? Mm-hmm. So if the ministry is growing, the kids are happy, if the worship sounds good, we don't go back and check with the keyboard player. It was like, you still good on keyboards? Because I know you play the keyboard and the guitar and you're a producer and you can sing. But right now, all I got you doing is playing the keyboard. Are there other things that you want to do? Right? Are there other things you want to explore? Where is God leading you? Like, we don't do that. Like, we act like people are furniture in church. Mm. You put them somewhere and it's like they have to stay there. So then when you don't offer them opportunities to move around, when you don't provide clarity on the fact that you can step down, right, without leaving the church, because I've never heard a church say that. Never, right? In a sermon that like, hey, if you're serving in a department and you're at a period right now where maybe it's too busy, the church will guilt you into it instead of, you know, it's like, well, we got to serve the Lord. So, you know, you got to put his house first. You got to prioritize his house. And I'm like, no, we got to prioritize his kingdom, first of all, because his kingdom ain't this house. You know what I mean? Like, what if God want me to go to Nicaragua and be a missionary, but I'm the youth pastor here? You don't want me to go to Nicaragua and save some unsaved people because you don't want to have to backfill a position? Because if we're not developing talent, if we're genuinely discipling people, you should always have somebody to fill a role in leadership, because yeah, you're always leading and building leaders, right? So, I think that's what we struggle from. And it's not just at churches. It's in corporate America. We don't develop leaders, right? We get people in leadership roles and we leave them there. And then any other thing, unless they're really self-motivated and really self-aware and you know, and got a lot of initiative, they wind up stuck in those places. And then they just abandon them because they're stressed out, they're tired, or they honestly get inspired from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That's normally what happens at church. Somebody complimented you on something that your church ignores. Somebody spoke into your life about the ministry that you've been wanting to build out, but your pastor ain't listened to it or ain't nobody asked you. And then people are like, oh man, you should step out. You should do your own thing. And I tell pastors all the time that when I speak to them, if you have people in your church that have never started a nonprofit organization, you're not leading them. Because there should be something that somebody in your church wants to do based on their faith, based on their priority, that is not on the church's to-do list. And you should encourage them not to start a ministry at the church, not to add another committee or whatever, but say, you should start an organization, raise money, and go take care of that, right? If you got women in your church that want to deal with sex trafficking and abuse, help them start an organization to go do that. If you've got, you know, men who want to teach youth vocational skills, instead of making everything, trying to keep everything under the umbrella of the church, help them start an organization to go do that, right? Because then they'll have outside influence. They'll be fulfilled in doing what God called them to do. They can have their own organization and still attend the church, right? So that's why I say sometimes we need to step down and maybe we do need to build what God's calling us to build. But that doesn't mean we don't need leadership. That doesn't mean we don't need community and we don't need fellowship. And if you're in a church that you know what I mean? You're in a church that like starts rejecting people, or because what normally happens, right? You get treated like you sinning when you want to step down out of ministry. Like, you can only get sat down if you get caught like an adulterous affair. You've been talking to one of the teenagers via text message. You know what I'm saying? Then it's like, yeah, Oh, you need to sit down. But like, that's not the only case, right? And that's why a lot of people are afraid of that. Because if I step down, they're going to think I did something to get sat down. Mm. Right? Because they've never seen people just say, no, I'm still going to be here, but I don't want to be the pastor no more. He can be the pastor. I'm going to be in the back. You know what I'm saying? Like, I need some time. I got some other stuff God's doing. So in the culture, we only see people leave ministry when they have problems with leadership or when they did something that required discipline. Saying no, like, I'm going to help Stephen focus on Humble and Honest. So I'm going to let him step down from this role so he can focus on that. And then we're going to move on from there. You know what I'm saying? Because God knows what he's doing and we don't need to try to dictate or control who comes and who goes. We need to do the most with who's there, right? But we got to check in and make sure that you're still in alignment. And I don't think the church does that well. And I don't think the people in the positions are honest enough because they don't feel like they can be. But you need to be honest, right? The only thing that can hurt is, right, they can say, no, you need to leave. And you were going to leave anyway. So the best thing that can happen, with they could say, we completely understand, we support you, and we want to continue to pour into your family, your ministry, or what you're doing while you're here. We want to promote it for you. We want you to help it grow. Those are the two options. So, like, just be honest.
I'm convinced also that's why a decent amount of people have not gone back to church, because they don't want to serve in those same places that they were beforehand. But now they got a way out by saying, oh, you know, COVID, I ain't getting the vaccine, all of that. But, sir, we are out of time. I thank you so much for this conversation.
My pleasure, man. It was great talking to you, man. Thank you for following the channel, man. I'm sure sharing the content or even inviting me to your platform. I definitely appreciate it, man. It was a good conversation.
And there you have it. My conversation with Pastor Roy Dockery. Pastor Roy, thank you for giving us the savage truth today. So grateful for your time. And listen, if you guys want to hear more of his content, I put a link in the show notes so you guys can see all that he has to offer, both on his YouTube and podcast channels. And also, like I mentioned before, if you'd love to hear my reaction to this episode, you can check it out on Patreon. Guys, thank you again for joining us today, and I hope to see you again on the next episode of the Humble and Honest Podcast. Boy, I know they love.